Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
A few months ago, I ordered a skip bin and filled it with perfectly good paving bricks we no longer wanted, only to watch two men spend hours taking every single brick out of the bin and onto a trailer to reuse. And I was actually really embarrassed. I thought, why didn't I just give them away in the first place? And it's not just bricks. I've thrown out clothes that could have been mended, toys and household items that probably could have been fixed. I'm the perfect example of the throwaway society we have become. And yes, I am embarrassed. We are in a world drowning with objects. Anything can be thrown out. A barely used smartphone, a TV, a dress you've worn once and don't like anymore, and it seems culturally acceptable. Is this you too? Is it easier and cheaper to ditch rather than fix something? And are you trying to change your habits? 1300 222 720 is the number, or you can text on 0437 922 720. Our focus today is our throwaway culture and how to change it. And with me is David Klein, who started the Buy Nothing movement here in Perth, and Julie Leslie. She is an advocate for sustainable fashion. And again, we would love you to be part of this discussion and tell me if you are changing your habits and how you are trying to do it. Now, David, if I can start with you, you started the Buy Nothing movement. What was the thinking behind it?
Well, to be clear, I didn't start the movement. The movement is an international project. I just started the first group here in WA in Wembley. My thinking was at the time probably pretty immature. It was just, this sounds like a pretty good idea. I had just moved to Wembley, and as typical with moving house, I got rid of some things and needed some new things and didn't know any of my neighbors yet, and thought, that was right around the time I heard about the international project and thought, you know, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't I create this group and give it a go? And it's taken right off. The numbers now for WA are pretty impressive.
We will get to the numbers in a moment, but you talked about the community side of it, but it became much more than that pretty quickly, because it is about not throwing things out, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's about both. It's about not throwing things out. And as a byproduct of that, you become more woven into your community through the exchanges you have with your neighbours.
So how many groups are there in Australia?
In Australia, I'm not exactly sure. I've got the WA numbers in front of me, though. There are 110 in WA now, comprising 55,000 people comprising those 110 groups.
Right. And do you know how many items have been traded or given away?
So I was trying to work that out. It would have to be an estimate. It could be as many as 5 million for WA. At some point, this has been probably nearly 2 years ago, I worked out that our group had about 25,000 items. I was comparing notes with another local admin just this morning, who says their group is averaging 250 items a day. So that's 70,000 a year. So I think it'd be pretty, you could conservatively say that 2 million items in WA have been saved from the landfill, and it could be as many as 5 million.
And
Facebook doesn't give us a way to make that, to easily measure that.
And what sort of things? Anything and everything?
Oh, you name it. Anything and everything. Things as big as pianos and cars. Things as small as, I've got these extra jars left over. Does anybody have anything they need to put in a glass jar? And everything in between.
And also no money exchanges hands. This
Correct.
Is all things being shared, given away.
Correct.
And the people that join, you talked about the obviously being part of the community, which is a huge plus, but is their motivation also to try and be a little bit more conscious about what they are actually throwing away, what can be reused?
Absolutely. It probably varies a little bit. I think a lot of people join for the free stuff because it feeds the consumerist mindset that we're trained to have now. And what happens over time, I've found, is when there's an endless amount of free stuff to be had, you have to ask yourself a little more deeply, do I really want this thing? Do I really want this object in my life? And I found personally in maybe the first 6 months, say, of having the group, that things that I would have said, oh, I want that, if had somebody posted it 6 months ago, I've gotten to the point now where I go, you know, if you take the money out of the equation, do I want this thing in my life? Do I want this object? And it, in your mind, tends to shift, I think, to a little less consumerist, and being a little more conscious about what are the things that I'm cluttering up my life with and cluttering up my house with?
Is it something you want or something you need?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So I think a lot of people start wanting the free stuff. A lot of people start with the, I have just renovated my house and I've got a lot of pavers or a lot of appliances and I don't want to put this stuff in the landfill. Some people start with that. That's their door in. Other people start, my friend said it was cool, so I joined. So I think people start from different angles, but everybody kind of gets to the same place of, do I need these things? And knowing my neighbors better than I did when I started too.
Now, Julie, if I can bring you in, because I imagine a lot of clothes are also part of the buy nothing movement, but this all relates to the fashion industry as well, doesn't it?
It does, very much so. One of the most wasteful industries across the world, the second most polluting industry in the world, actually, the fashion industry after oil and gas. So it's a big problem for the world. There's an awful lot of textile waste that's out there that needs to be dealt with and no one seems to be taking responsibility for.
What are the figures in regard to that? What sort of waste are we talking about?
Well, globally, we're producing about 100 billion garments across the world every year.
Wow.
About a third of those never get sold. So that's all either stockpiling in a warehouse somewhere. It's being incinerated, which is obviously contributing to greenhouse gases. It's a pretty significant number. And Australians, post-consumerist, are discarding over 6,000 kilos of textile waste to landfill every 10 minutes. Sorry.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
It's colossal.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. And is what? Why the amount that we buy? Because there's a lot of cheap. It's much more affordable. I can go and buy a $3 T-shirt now, and if it rips a week later, well, that's fine. I'll just throw it out.
Absolutely.
Is that the big part of the problem
here? It's a huge part of the problem. We're buying about 60% more than we were 15 years ago, and we're keeping it half as long. So it is very much a sign of the times that we're buying lesser quality far more often, keeping less and discarding it without a thought, without any kind of responsibility. There's no conscious consumerism involved with fast fashion, unfortunately. It's just a churn and burn and chuck it out and move on to the next thing faster than you can blink. And it's going to create a massive problem. It already is a massive problem.
Have you got any idea or any figures that can tell us how often we wear something on average before we throw it out? Can you give us an insight into our habits?
Depends on the stat you follow. It's between 4 and 7 times.
One
garment. An average Australian women, I should say, are keeping and wearing their garments an average of 4 to 7 times before throwing it out. So, again, quite ridiculous stats at the moment that we just wear things, we get sick of them and we discard them, or we discard them because they're such poor quality that they fall apart. You know, that $3 T-shirt you were referring to hasn't been made well. It's not been made to last. You put it through the washing machine and it becomes full of holes. The threads come loose. The colour fades, whatever it happens to be, because it's been made with such poor quality, it just will not last beyond that time. So it's not necessarily that we are falling out of love with our clothes, although that's also a problem. It's the fact that they're not made to last. We're just not buying quality garments anymore that are built to last beyond a few washes.
You are listening to Focus on ABC Radio Perth at 21 minutes past 10, and in the studio with me talking about our increasing throwaway culture is David Klein. He's the founder of Buy Nothing. Well, he started the Buy Nothing websites here in Perth, and also Julie Leslie, and she's an advocate for sustainable fashion. So what are we talking about when we mean what does that mean, sustainable fashion?
Sustainable fashion can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It sort of seems to be the intersection of wherever your area of interest lies. So everybody wears clothes. Well, most people wear clothes. And it depends whether you're into it for, you enjoy secondhand shopping, you enjoy knowing the transparency of a supply company, where the clothes have come from. Are you into it for people and planet? Are you into it for save the animals? Are you into it because you want fair trade, you want freedom of association, you want to support farmers, local farmers, you want to support local business? So it all tends to intersect, you know, even save the oceans and
there's
and
a lot of issues.
Production. There's a lot of issues and they all intersect at this area that we've sort of started to call either sustainable or ethical fashion.
And on the text, Linda says, my husband is good at fixing things but tells me it's cheaper to buy new than repair. I now believe it is best just not to buy stuff. Buy what you really need, not what you really want. Thank you for that, Linda. why, how, when did we become such a throwaway culture? And I'll put this out to both of you, because once upon a time when you referred to, say, disposable items, it was like it was low-cost items like paper napkins or razors, for instance. And why have we become such a throwaway culture? Just because everything's cheap and available and easy to buy.
I have a theory on that.
Yes, please.
I think it's largely happened in my lifetime. I'm in my early 40s now. And I think it's a byproduct of globalization of the economy, and goods are produced so much more cheaply in relation to what wages are in Western countries now, that whereas when I was a kid, to buy, say, a new TV, that probably would have been a month's wages for my father. And for a lot of us now, you can buy a TV for a half a day's wage on a decent salary or a day's work. So the relative work required to obtain goods and services, thanks to cheaper manufacturing being done in places like Asia, I think has really driven up the consumerist kind of culture. You know, one of the marks that's an easy one, I think, to look at is the lack of cobblers anymore, people who repair shoes. I remember when I was a kid, we'd go to the cobbler. My dad would take me a couple of times a year down to Fred's shoe shop to get his shoes repaired. Now, Fred's has been out of business for 30 years now, and the cobblers, I notice them around town, are closing too. People just don't want to repair their clothes and their shoes anymore. So I think largely that's it. Things are so much cheaper in relative to our earning power for in places like Australia and the US and Canada and Europe now.
And the point that you made, obviously, too, because they're cheaper, they're not built to last.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think we've also lost touch with where our things come from, who made them, who grew them, who sewed them, who put them together, who, you know, who repaired them for us. I mean, I'm personally putting my tailor and my cobbler's children through college. I spend a lot repairing clothes, but again, you can only do that if they're made with quality to start with. We've lost so much. We've lost touch with who's making our clothes. For example, I can only really speak about clothes, but we don't know where they came from, who grew the cotton, who dyed it, who milled it, who sewed it, who put it together. You know, if you know the stories behind your things, mm-hmm. if you are materialistic like that, as in you love the story behind where you source things, you're very likely to hang on to them, to value them more, and not let them go with such little thought. I mean, throwing things away, taking responsibility, I suppose. Well, you know, where is this magical place called away anyway? Once upon a time, our waste was our responsibility, and if we didn't take care of it, it piled up around us, and now it's become somebody else's problem so quickly, again, in our lifetime, where we just discard things without even thinking about it. Somebody somewhere has to deal with this waste, and it's, again, going to become a global problem for everybody.
And we're already seeing it, you know, just with the recycling and losing markets like China, for instance, and that's causing problems here. 1-300-222-720, you're welcome to put a question or share your comments with our panel. Let's go to Emily. Good morning, Emily.
Oh, good morning. I'm one of those sentimental people, and I've got some lovely chairs, love them, but they've got a raffia seat that's gone, and I've just picked it up this morning half an hour ago and told it was going to be $400 to repair it.
So what happens? You're going to have to throw that out?
Yeah, I take it home to the farm and chuck it in the tip on the farm and go and find myself a chair for $150.
And Emily, is that the problem? That is the problem, isn't it?
I love things and I love looking after things and I want to repair things, but I'm just constantly unable to afford to do that because of wages and because of what it costs to fix things and the time it does. So it's almost like those repair places need a government subsidy to make them, you know, to make them available to people to use.
Thank you very much for that, Emily. Is it also the case, though, that when we look at the kind of things that end up being thrown out, like your smartphone, you know, why pay $200 to fix your screen when you can just pay an extra $100 and get a brand new phone? Is that part of the problem, is that things aren't designed to last and designed in a way that it's actually cheaper to buy a new one than repair it?
Absolutely. I think so. Other than our cars and our houses, there's not much that we default to repairing anymore. It's people tend to just buy a new one. And Emily's story with her chair there is a perfect example. Can pay a professional here in Perth, a professional furniture maker or repairer to spend a few days on it for $400, or go down to IKEA or Freedom Furniture and buy something cheaply made that will do the job just as well in the short term anyway for $150. It's a real problem. I don't know how you fix it. The government subsidy is a good idea for the repair industry. I hadn't really thought about that before.
Yeah.
And I'd certainly be looking at handing them on to somebody if that's the case, popping them on your local Buy Nothing group and saying, would anybody like these to use them? Perhaps in that circular economy, somebody else might be able to make use of it. Rather than taking it to the tip, try and pass it on to somebody who may find some value with it. That's all. That would be my first port of call.
Yep.
And then obviously we could look at other alternatives that may be used for the wood or the supplies, or there'd be people around who would really value something like that. So that's not for everybody, for sure.
Yeah, let's go to Sandy. Hi, Sandy.
Yeah, hi. Regarding Emily, the previous caller, she should contact her local men's shed group or something like that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But that's not
good
why
idea.
I'm calling.
Okay.
What I'm calling is I believe that the throwaway society was preceded by the sustained campaign by banks to use credit. And early credit cards were actually just sent out. They were just sent. I got mine. I got a bank card for $500, which was a fortune back in the 70s, and I didn't apply for it. They just sent it out. And, like, what happened in Australia was we all paid it, and then all of a sudden the banks weren't making money off the interest. But I'm also part of a local group. We recycle and rehome things on a constant basis. It started when I was working in community care and I saw people that needed help. And I had friends who were getting rid of a TV and upgrading, and I instead of them chucking out the TV, I gave it to the older couple. And it's just, you've got to have a mindset to be looking at things that can actually go back into service for people that aren't sort of convinced they need to have the status or the immediate attention-grabbing thing of something new.
Yeah, so true. Sandy, thank you so much for that. And on the text, 0437 922 720, Jeff says, inkjet printers come to mind. If you empty all your cartridges at the same time, it is actually cheaper to discard the whole printer and buy a new one. And Dan says, I have a microwave oven that doesn't work because of a small fault with the door, which doesn't close the circuit, that a handyman could repair, but it would cost me more than buying a new one. Are there people who do repairs and then sell or give away this sort of stuff instead of me dumping it at the council depot as part of e-waste? Well, we heard men's sheds are probably a good starting point. Jackie says, I love the street pickup. I find bags and bags of new clothes, toys and other new stuff that could be used by others. I redirect them to friends or second-hand charity shops.
This is Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
And with me in the studio is David Klein. He's part of the Buy Nothing movement here in Perth, and Julie Leslie, an advocate for sustainable fashion. You also, Julie, didn't you wear op shop clothes and nothing but op shop clothes for a year?
I did. That's all I bought for a whole 12 months, 2016. I dedicated as my year of the thrift. And, virtually everything I bought that year was all from op shop, secondhand, online, consignment stores, secondhand in one fashion or another.
How difficult was that? And I'm sure there was lots of bargains out there. I mean, A, you saved money, and B, you still found good quality clothes?
Exceptional quality clothes. Yeah, there's a lot out there that's truly, truly good quality if you know where to look. Depends how much time you have on your hands. If you're an op shopper, then it takes a little bit of dedicated time to get around an op shop and op shop properly, I suppose, if that's such a thing. But there's also, there's a lot of consignment stores in Perth or resale stores that sell things on behalf of other people, which is great. There's a lot of online stores that are selling good quality secondhand garments, you know, things that, again, people have worn once that they wish to just straight away move on and sell while it's still on trend or in fashion or whatever. So, yeah, there's great quality things out there if you know what you're looking for. And it was a real learning curve for me. I came out of it with more questions than answers, to be truthful, but I've got a great wardrobe put together on a very thrifty budget, and I think a wardrobe I'm completely happy with. And that, to me, is a sustainable wardrobe, one that you are happy with, that you love, that you take care of, that you repair, that you want to keep for a really long time. So I was really happy with the outcome of 2016, and I just carried it on. It's been a way of life for me now.
So that's your normal now?
That's completely my normal.
Wow. Good on you. Isn't it just? Let's go to John. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nadia. Good morning to your panel.
Now, John, do you really have seven kids?
We have a blended family of seven children and 10 grandchildren.
Yeah, that's a big family.
It is. But my thought is that it's partly attitudinal, and I think because of our age, our children give us grief about how much stuff that we actually keep. And the other thing is that they say that our favourite shopping place other than Bunnings is Tamala Park Recycling Facility, because we take stuff there, but we always come back with stuff that we recycle at home. A lot of our outdoor furniture, I built a whole chicken coop from materials up there, and I suppose our attitude is you can do a lot of that because of the way in which we were brought up to try and make use of everything you had. And my wife is a great recycler because she can not only recycle clothes, she can also recycle food. And we will often laugh about how much, how much mileage we get out of a particular meal because of the way in which we've used ingredients, etc. But I think it is attitudinal, and I take the comment from your panel member earlier who mentioned about the disposable income that we have, and products are so much cheaper, people become used to that.
Well, thank you very much, John. Let's get a response for you.
Yeah. John, that sounds like you're a fantastic guy. you said you have some grandchildren, so you're a bit older, and grew up in the generation sort of before that, right? Were you on the sort of tail end of the Depression, World War II era? Is that where you came
from? The baby boomers.
Baby boomers, yeah, like my parents, yes. And they have the same mentality. And I think our kids now are just conditioned that things are just cheap and shopping can be a pastime to do on the weekends and go obtain a bunch of stuff and throw it away. Whereas folks of your generation, that's a foreign concept that you would have thought was crazy. If 20-year-old you would have seen what a Saturday looks like in Inaloo now, you'd be shocked, I suspect. And my generation, I'm in my early 40s, has sort of seen that transition in my life. And my kids, they don't know anything else other than what I can try to steer them in the other direction, which is not easy.
Yeah. I mean, if a bike was broken, you fixed it. It was, you used everything, wasted nothing. That was certainly how my parents grew up. Let's go to Richard. Hello, Richard.
Yeah, hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Richard.
Yeah, look, I was about to say the media have let themselves off a bit easily here on account that the media in general and advertisers in particular have been in cahoots with capital and consumerism for a long, long, long time in destroying traditional values like frugality, providence, thrift, all those traditional things. They were discarded long, long ago. The media and advertisers attacked them relentlessly to increase consumerism. And as a result, many, many people now, not just young people, but many people now have very low impulse control. They buy stuff needlessly. They throw away stuff thoughtlessly. And, this is something that, media organisations like the ABC have failed to attack with advertisers. These people understand human psychology probably better than anyone. And, they have relentlessly attacked traditional values. And as a result, we're neck deep in rubbish we don't want.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that, Richard. He makes it is an interesting observation. It is that I must have that. I must have that.
That's absolutely right. There's a book that's pretty interesting by a guy called Yuval Harari about the history of sapiens, a history of humankind. And he equates consumerism to a lot of the world religions and draws this. That consumerism says that happiness comes from buying things. And Richard, you're spot on that the advertisers have preyed on that. The guys at BMW will say happiness comes from a new BMW in the driveway. The guys at Ralph Lauren would say happiness comes from a new outfit in your closet. And it has eroded away a lot of the stuff that really makes us happy as humans, because happiness has nothing to do with BMWs in the driveway or new outfits, you know, in the closet. It's from a lot of other things.
Or a momentary happiness.
Yes, that's right. A brief spike. Yes.
Yeah. On the text, 0437 922 720, a couple of our listeners have sent me a newspaper ad, and it's from September 24, 1992, and it's the first annual intra-national Buy Nothing Day. September 24, 1992, participate by not participating, a 24-hour continent-wide moratorium on consumer spending designed to remind both the consumer and the retailer of the true power of the buying public. And this is Buy Nothing Day does not compromise with consumerism, it opposes it. It's the idea of Vancouver artist Ted Dave. The day is supposed to provide a forum for North Americans who feel dissatisfied with the pandering attitude taken by the advertising industry towards the public. So that was back in 1992.
That's
so
amazing.
Love that. Isn't it?
Can I just add that was my mother's 50th birthday?
Oh. Now, a couple more texts. Heather says, when I was in England, a community group met once a month for a fix and mix day or evening. We shared our tools, our sewing machines, our expertise. It was fantastic and organised by the local council. John says, I'm just sitting on the bench I got off the Verge 5 years ago, sanded, varnished and looks like new. I'm preparing my olives for this year's storage. We have 5 litres left from last year to eat. I can look over to my 50-year-old car I have owned for 37 years. Most things can be repaired if you spend time. It's just the rush around society that makes it worth as well. Lots of people are telling you to go and look on Gumtree for private repairers that might be able to help out. And this interesting observation from Mia, this throwaway society extends to relationships as well. Don't bother to work on it, just move on. Jane, good morning.
Good morning. I'm just ringing up. I've started a sewing group that started out of the Buy Nothing group in my local area to encourage people to come along and learn how to, well, first of all, get their granny's sewing machine or auntie or whoever's, or the sewing machine off the Verge that they found, to get them up and running and learn how to sew and repair and fix. And the group we've got, you talked about happiness. Well, I see very happy people leaving the group when they've repaired or fixed a lot of their items that they've either got from recycling off the Buy Nothing group or just making something.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Jane. And look, there is lots of little innovative things like this out there. You just need to look for them, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Hmm.
Well, we've come across the co-founder of the Repair Cafe in Perth. I love this idea. Elle, good morning.
Good morning. Okay. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, look, thank you for your time. What is the Repair Cafe?
So essentially the Repair Cafe is a community meeting place where local people come together. They bring broken items from home and learn how to repair them with the assistance of a volunteer expert. So waste is diverted from landfill. People learn new skills and can go away and fix other items. And then CO2 emissions are also reduced because people are repairing as opposed to buying new products.
So what sort of things are being brought in to fix?
Oh, we have all sorts. So we have five or six different stations. So we've got bikes, we've got sort of smaller items of furniture, clothing, some electrical. So with electrical, we stay under 240 volts or they need to have an adapter. Toys, we have a glue tape and string table, so that'll be like broken items of china. We have jewellery, all sorts.
So is this all in one... Is this all in one location, Elle? Is there one place?
Yeah, so we meet monthly. It's on the third Saturday of every month, and we meet for 2 hours at a cafe in Mount Hawthorne, Academy Cafe,
okay.
at the Miss Shopping Centre. And, we have about 20 volunteers that come together, and the atmosphere in the room is just wonderful. It's a real sense of community and people coming together.
And are the repairs free?
Yes, there's a donation box at the end if people feel like contributing. We are funded by the City of Vincent, which is fantastic.
So ideally, having these kind of cafes popping up in other suburbs would be fantastic.
It'd be wonderful. And we've already had interest from sort of people in other suburbs wanting to set up their own groups. We are part of the International Repair Cafe Foundation, so there's 1,400 cafes all over the world. The idea started in Holland in 2009 and has grown from there.
And most of the things that you get, I assume most are fixable.
Yeah, I think we have a really good success rate. The majority are fixable. If not, we're able to advise people on where to go to get them repaired properly or where to take them to recycle them responsibly.
Now, Julie touched earlier on the idea of sentimentality around associated with your things. And do you, Elle, have you observed that people like their things more after they repair them and fix them?
I think so. And look, that sentimentality is certainly true. A lot of items that are coming through aren't particularly valuable, but they have huge value to the person. So, for example, my own personal thing would be I have this little Paddington Bear China model that was on the bench in the kitchen, and my son whacked it with his lightsaber and it was smashed on the floor. And I think my grandmother bought me that when I was about one. Now, I probably wouldn't pay to go and get that repaired, but I wanted it fixed, and I was able to take that along and learn how to properly glue that together, and it's got new life again, and it's lovely.
I think that's
I'm looking at him right now.
One of the things we find with fashion as well, if people have lost touch with how to repair their clothes, so sewing on a button or taking up a hem or getting a stain out or something like that, people have lost touch on how to do that themselves.
That's
so bringing
right.
things like that along to the repair cafe is a great idea too.
Yeah.
Well done, Elle. That's fantastic. And thank you so much for talking to us about that this morning on ABC Radio Perth. Quick question for you, Julie. Any ideas on how to dispose of old clothing to one out for further wearing, like underwear, nightwear, that kind of thing?
There's a lot of city councils now are doing days once every 6 months or so where they will actually accept any textile waste that can't be donated. That's a good point to make too, is if you are considering donating clothes to an op shop or something like that, please make sure they're of good quality, resellable condition. Don't dump your unusable garments with the op shops. That creates a whole wealth of problems as well. So have a look at your local city council and see when they're having a textile recycling day that they may take on board. Those sorts of things can be reused as rags in the rag trade. There's a lot of other uses for garments that can't be repaired or reworn if you put them in the right place. Something also to consider when you're purchasing these things is the post-consumer waste it may create. So you want to buy things that can be recycled is a great idea.
And before we leave, because we've got about a minute or two left, changing habits, and I guess that Rana Plaza collapse in Bangladesh, that was a bit of a game changer, wasn't it? That sort of put things on the radar for a lot of consumers, didn't it?
Really did, yeah. Back in 2013, on the 24th of April, 1,138 people died and over 2,500 people were injured in the single biggest disaster to hit the fashion industry in our history. So what it highlighted was that whole concept that these fast fashion companies had lost touch with who was making their clothes and what they were going through. They had no freedom of association. They knew that they should not have entered that building. They knew it was unsafe. They were forced to, with no voice to support them or back them up in their decision not to go back to work. They were forced back into the building, and when all the generators fired up, the building, which was unsafe by any standard, collapsed and resulted in this massive tragedy. So it really forced a lot of people to ask the question, following the fashion revolution movement that stemmed from that annually on the anniversary of the Rana Plaza collapse, it asks us to question our brands, who made my clothes? So we find out where they come from, who's taking responsibility for how they were made, and were the people who made them treated ethically? So a good movement to be a part of.
So changing attitudes is going to be a slow process, and it is things like the Repair Cafe, the Buy Nothing movement, talking about it like we are today. That's the way forward, isn't it?
And asking questions. Just there's always more questions than answers. If you can ask the right questions, it starts the right conversations.
That's right. Yeah, I think the conversation is happening now, and that's the first step.
Well, thank you very much for being part of this conversation, David Klein and Julie Leslie. Thank you.